The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Or 51551 for text. Now, Aisling Gannon joins us in Studio 10. How are you doing, Aisling?
Hi, how are you, Ray?
Good. Aisling's son is 11 years old. Steve was born a female, but has identified as a boy since he was 2.5 years old. Since the time Steve could speak, he's been consistent, insistent and persistent that he's a boy. They're your words.
Yeah. Yes,
they are. Just last week, Aisling was honoured as a 2019 LGBT plus Ally role model in recognition of her work on diversity and inclusion as a partner at Evershed Sutherland Law Firm, and that was a global award. She has spoken in her workplace about why, as the parent of a transgender child, it is important to break down barriers. Thanks so much for coming in, and we'll talk more about the award in a moment. But first, to get your story and Steve's story, how many children do you have?
I have two kids, Ray.
Two.
Like you.
Yes. And Steve is the youngest.
That's correct, yes. He's 11.
He's 11, right. And he's an older...
He has an older sister, Surika, who's 13, who, as I was just mentioning, is a little bit self-conscious at this stage in her life. So she's not so happy I talk too much about her, but he's delighted I talk to you about him.
Okay. But it's not her story. It's Steve's story, although she is part of it.
She's a great sister.
So when Steve was born, you were two girls. That was...
So as Steve said to me not that long ago, I thought I had two girls. He says he was always a boy, I just thought I had a girl.
Uh-huh.
But yes, he was christened with a girl's name. We were rearing him in what we thought was a gender-neutral house, but I thought I had two daughters, yes.
Right. And why did you decide to have a gender-neutral house?
I suppose I was brought up in a house where I had great parents who encouraged us to be anything we wanted to be. We were three girls and then a boy. I didn't feel there was any difference between us. But all my life, I felt there was no need for gender stereotypes. I went to college, I worked, I wanted to work. My mum always worked. It just wasn't... It was a conscious decision we made to have it sort of a gender neutral house. So my older girl, when she was born, by the time she could walk and talk, she was the dancing queen, as her granny called her. She was pink, she was sparkly. And the second kid came along and wasn't.
But Surika gravitated towards that just naturally.
Naturally,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
you, when you say it was, I'm just interested to know what a gender neutral house would be, you know. So
all gifts. We didn't look for... So there were certain family members who might give sort of high heels and sparkly tops, etc. And I sort of veered away from those sort of things. So it was balls, bricks, playing outside, encouraged to get dirty,
yes,
you know, rough and tumble. And their dad was really keen on that too. So that was really...
And the nursery
was the
wasn't
norm.
Painted any particular colour?
No. Sorry, there was a time when she wanted pink things in her room, etc.
Okay.
But otherwise things were neutral.
Neutral, okay.
So we tried.
Okay. So then Steve comes along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as young as Steve was 2.5, we were doing hand-me-downs. And as you might remember, in your house or in other houses, there were hand-me-downs. Thought I had two girls. So there was the hand-me-down swimming togs, the hand-me-down nicks when we were doing toilet training. And we started having tantrums at that stage.
And 2.5.
2.5. Would not wear the hand-me-down swimming togs or nicks. And that's really when it all started to come out. And I remember one sort of meltdown, we were going swimming and I said, get your swimming togs on, you want to go swimming, you really like swimming, will you come on? He said, no, and he wanted to wear a pair of what we call shark shorts. So they were like swimming shorts,
yes,
that you'd wear maybe with a t-shirt top. And I was saying, just put the swimming togs on, will you come on, let's go.
So you were offering him a girl's bathing,
yes,
suit.
Yeah. Exactly, an all-in-one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had a meltdown and... You know, when you remember these moments in your life, he was having a bit of a meltdown. He was sort of under the bottom bunk of his bed and I'm on the ground leaning under the bottom bunk of the bed. And he said, he goes, well, this isn't me. You know, my privates are wrong. When will I get the right privates? Slightly different language to that. And I did not know what to do. And I remember calling his dad and saying,
right,
can you help me here? And I did not know what to say. And so fairly shortly after, I remember ringing the GP and saying, you know, not sure what this is about. And he said, well, I'm not sure either, but it's not utterly unheard of. Let's go and see somebody. So we went to see a local, I think, psychotherapist is the phrase, and she indicated that she thought it was a gender identity crisis. It was probably a phase, but to go with it, not to sort of quash it in any way. And her advice was to sort of keep doing what we had been doing and maybe allow a bit more openness, which was to go to, for instance, shops that sold girl and boy clothes, stand in the middle of the shop and say, What do you want?
Yeah.
Instead of going into a boys' shop or a girls' shop. And consistent, insistent and persistent. in around that time, he was playing a lot with his older sister, and I was sort of more live things and concentrating more. If they were doing role plays, he'd be the uncle, the brother, or the dog, and would not role play in a girl's role, didn't identify with girl things. At this stage, he was hadn't yet turned 3, I don't think, and he had a bike with no stabilizers and used to wear these all-in-one dressy-up outfits like Spider-Man or Superman. And he'd be cycling on this little camouflage bike along the seafront. And there was nothing about him. I remember, you know, everyone used to say, God, he's gorgeous, isn't he? Yes. Great. And everyone just thought he was a boy.
And just the private, so he would have seen his dad had you know, genitals.
And his cousins, yeah.
Right.
And he didn't. His cousins, and he knew his cousins were younger than him.
Had them.
And theirs had arrived, as he called.
Had arrived, right. Yeah. And his hadn't arrived.
Yeah. Right. At 2.5.
It's because it's very young, isn't it? Because I don't have a memory from 2.5.
Neither do I. I'll be honest, the only memories I have from, that, you know, anything remotely close to childhood are from photographs, I reckon.
Yeah.
But in this, you know, the equivalent of the parent PhD that you do when you find yourself in a new world like this, apparently gender is set in our minds between ages 2 and 4. The theory of that is there.
Right.
And apparently if he had an MRI of his brain, he's likely to have a brain that looks like a boy's brain rather than a girl's brain.
So when you went to the psychotherapist and they said that it's you know, it's a gender identity crisis, what can you remember what you thought?
I remember thinking, actually, to be honest, I remember thinking, geez, I'm glad there's a name for that. Or I'm glad that's a thing. That, you know, it's nothing to be wondered about or worried, you know.
Yes.
And I was really grateful for a bit of direction, to be honest. And there were one or two people in our lives at times that said, that's a load of nonsense now, would you put her back in the dress? And I said, well, she never wore the dress anyway, so I'm not putting her back in any dress. And it just gave a bit more freedom. But I remember there was a little bit of wondering, but I remember thinking, we'll just see how this goes. It's probably a phase.
This is sort of 8.5 years ago.
Yes.
And the conversation around transgender hadn't begun really in the public sphere, had it?
Certainly it wasn't in my life, right? I'll be honest.
No. Yeah.
And really, it wasn't until he was 7. I remember sitting at a computer, and as a parent, I'm on this show telling a story against myself. I thought I was open-minded. I thought I was, you know, liberated. I thought I was, you know, in touch with what was going on. I did not know what I was looking up. I did not know what to look for. And I know that I had people around me who were probably trying to help me, but I was stuck in this, it's a gender identity crisis. You know, we'll see how this goes. It's a phase. And I was quite happy to go with it. It wasn't that I was stuck for it or against it or whatever. But I wasn't locked in it at all. But I remember going online to find somebody to talk to, and I didn't know where to start or where to look. And honestly, I did not know what the T of the LGBT stood for. I had heard the phrase. I'd probably used the reference many times. And I got in touch with TENI, the Transgender Equality Network of Ireland. And there were two people there I spoke to at different stages. And they, as I've said to them since, they caught me when I was falling. I did not know what to do. I didn't know that this was something I could work with, that was something I should work with. I didn't know how to be a parent. Mm. I didn't know how to show unconditional love. I didn't know whether I was supposed to show leadership.
So how could you? How could
you?
No
idea.
Yeah.
But you know yourself as a parent. You presume you're supposed to be at least half a step ahead of them. You know, sometimes we're making it up, but you expect to be half a step ahead of them, or you try to be. Whereas in this instance, I hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
Now, at this stage, he was really forceful about the fact that he had to change his name, cut his hair, etc.
Okay, so we've gone from 2 to 7 to change his name. So let's take it back a bit. So 2.5, fine, just, but then you're going into a school situation.
Yeah.
So what are the practicalities around that then?
So the practicalities around that, again, it was a sort of make it up as I go along. Got in touch with this. So he was going into the same school that his sister had been in. So I was able to get in touch with the school and say, would it be okay if she wears the boy uniform, as they used to call it, rather than the girl uniform. So it was trousers and a shirt and tie rather than a dress or a pinafore and a cardigan. And they said, yeah, no problem. So he went into school and he had this absolutely amazing teacher and made a gorgeous friend in the class. And it just so happened that his class were chosen to do a pilot ASHTOR program. So there was no seated areas, there were workstations. And he just opened up. He was quite quiet and reserved at the time. And he really became best friends with a little fellow in the class who had some special needs. And the two of them just looked after each other and the rest of the class, all rallied with them, etc. And so Steve didn't feel as different. He had gone through a phase of feeling quite different.
It was mixed school.
Mixed school. Yeah. A mixed school, mixed class. And he was intending...
And was there anything said?
Nothing.
No.
And in when he was in, at the end of, I think it was at the end of senior infants, another parent spoke to me. And she's a lovely girl, still know her well. And she said, you know, Steve's a little bit like Brad and Angelina's child. You know, and I think she may even have said they have a kid who's transgender. Went over my head.
Right.
I remember afterwards saying to her, you could have been a tip off to me, but I didn't.
So you didn't, you weren't familiar with the term?
No, I didn't. No. And I certainly didn't think that had anything to do with this.
Yes.
I honestly
because
thought that was an older...
Steve was still, and I know people who are transgender don't like to hear their
old name.
Yeah, their old name, right. So, but he was Steve still was still answering to that name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And at the time, I used the phrase that he was a tomboy. But by the end of senior infants, he wasn't happy. He kept saying, tomboy's a type of girl. I'm a type of boy. And again, wasn't really sure what to do with that, so sort of fudged it. So by the time he was going into first class, this was becoming a much bigger issue. The summer he was going into first class, we were away on holidays, and we were holidaying in Ireland in Cork, and every single child he met, firstly, they spoke English. And so I was more aware of it. Whereas when you're in foreign countries and whatever, they just... They don't even talk to each other, they just play. You know, they sniff each other. You look about my age, you'll do. Whereas by the time he was going into first class, he'd been on holidays in Cork. And the first thing every child said to him was, are you a girl or a boy? So there was something kids...
And what was his answer?
He used to get really annoyed. And he'd say, my name is Sive, I'm a tomboy. And I remember him saying to me, I don't like saying that. And I don't like having to answer that question because I don't like what I have to say. And I remember thinking, well, this is tricky, but I'm not really sure what else to do.
And were you sad as a parent? Because, you know, as a parent...
I'm sad for him.
You want to fix things, don't you? That's your immediate reaction. And it's an intuitive thing. You just want to fix things for your kid to make their world a better place. And here he was very unhappy.
Yeah. And he was... There was one night, I remember he came in to me and... try not to get emotional myself. He came in to me and he said, I think I'm a freak, Mum. I don't think there's anyone else in the whole world like me. And I said... God, you're not, you know, I love you to bits. And, you know, and he goes, that's you, you're my mom. Of course you do. Mm. And he said, but I don't think there's anyone else like me. And I remember thinking, I don't really know what to do about this. And I remember starting thinking about the fact that he was in first class in school. And we were coming up towards a Christmas play. And his teacher, and he had this absolutely gorgeous teacher, had a fabulous SNA in the class. And we went in to meet her and she said, actually, I don't know what to do. He doesn't know what role to have in the play. The Christmas play. I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I was giving a girl roles and boy roles. And he goes, what about me? I'm in between. He goes, you don't know where to put me. And he's standing in this class in front of her. And she said, I'll never teach like this again. Because they used to have a girl Lena to come in from the yard or out to the yard, a girl Lena to go to the loo or whatever. And she goes, this poor kid isn't really sure what to do. So she could feel that it was becoming a bigger issue in his head. I could feel it was becoming a bigger issue at home. And it came forward one Monday night, you know, when the real conversations happen. I go in to say goodnight to him and he says, Mom, I need to cut my hair and change my name. It's going to be fine. Text everyone in your phone.
What age was he?
Seven.
Seven. You see, what fascinates me is because a lot of people talk about outside influences.
I know.
You know, people go online and they Google something and then they're in a community.
In our day, MTV.
The community, but the community confirms things and maybe, you know, sort of heightens things.
Yep.
He'd never seen. Steve had.
He'd never heard the phrase. He'd never, as he says afterwards, met anyone like him.
Yes.
He'd never. He thought he was the only person in the world, but he found his solution. And his solution was to cut his hair and change his name.
Right.
It was because he felt the only thing he had to change was other people's initial perception of him. And once he could change that, it would all be fine.
So, how did you react to that?
So I had a moment of parental brilliance, which was pure fluke, which was he said, text everyone in your phone right now and tell them.
Yeah.
I said, well, what if you, my moment of brilliance, and it was a fluke, was what if you decide to change your mind on the name? And he said, I won't. I said, but you could. So how about we don't do it today? And we just have a think about it for a few days and try it out at home for a few days and we see how it goes. And he said, all right. So I talked him down that particular evening. Following morning, he said, I've thought it through. I'm sticking with the name. I want you to tell school. I'm going to stay in the same school, but I'm going to go into the boys. The school he was in was becoming all girls or all boys in second class. So it was building in terms of a a need to make changes. And he wasn't aware at this stage that I was on the hunt for an alternate school because I didn't want him to go into all boys or all girls. And so he came down and he goes, I have it all sussed. Don't worry about making the communion. I don't want to make my communion. And if I did, it'd be in the suit, but it's okay. And I'll be gone. And he had all these things.
Thought it all through.
That he'd obviously been troubling him for a while, which I thought had just been my parental overthinking it, you know. And he said, but this is how it's going to be and this is the name. And I said, stick with it. So about 2 days later, we're slowly but surely speaking, you know, as parents to each other, to wider network of parents, etc. And he says, I'm a bit nervous about the name, because he'd gone for the name Sam initially. And he came home and he said, geez, Mum, you won't believe it. Sam could be short for Samantha.
Right.
And I said, yeah. And he goes, God, that was good thinking. Good thinking that I didn't tell everyone that it was Sam, because I better go for a different name. And then he came up with Steve. And he said, and it's Steve, not Stephen or not whatever. So it's Steve. And I said, yep. And I said, you know, do you want me to help you? And he said, no, you had your turn at giving me a name. This is my turn to give myself a name. And I said, yeah, great, okay. So he chose Steve. And at that stage then we started the slow process of engaging with the school, with sports, etc. Family, amazing. They're all out there that probably listening, and they've just been 100% amazing, blessed. School, wider, have all been fabulous people, but needless to say, they needed us to work with them and at their pace, which is totally understandable. And I think that was frustrating for a bit for Steve, and a little bit tricky for us as his parents, who were trying to be his funneling conduit of information. But ultimately, he changed his name.
Changed his school?
So he didn't change his school. He transitioned in the school he was in.
Right.
Still in first class.
So when you say transition, this is what they call
social transitioning. Yes. And don't worry, I don't worry about the language too
much. No. But
for those listening.
Yeah.
So I think it's called a social transition. And the social transition is where you go from having been known as, say, Sive, to being reintroduced to people as Steve and requesting that it be Steve and, as we now know, correctly called male pronouns, so he, him. So Steve, he, him. So the request was that the school wrote out to all the parents of the kids in his class, attaching a letter from us requesting that they respect his position.
Mm.
That he says he's always been a boy, he now wants to live as a boy, he'd like to change his name, and our request is that you respect his choices and would call him by that name. And that if you have any questions, you raise them with us, perhaps rather than with him. And we were just blown over by the kindness, the compassion, the loveliness we received. One parent actually wrote to me and said, they're not Irish and they don't speak Irish. They didn't know that Sive was an Irish girl's name. They just presumed Sive was a boy. Because
from the day
they'd met him,
yes,
as far as they were concerned, you know, he seemed like a boy.
You said somewhere that, and this is a bit probably sexist of you, but you said that Steve's behaviour suited a boy more than a girl.
And this is where I'm more and more alive to it now. So when he was very gregarious, loads of energy, and, you know, used to come out of school like a coiled spring and just bounce out of school and bounce off walls and climb trees and kick balls, and then he'd be able to relax a bit. But society was much more forgiving when his name was Steve and he had a short haircut. There wasn't that same, and I mean out in public places in relation to running around a supermarket or sitting still in a cafe or it. And I fully accept my role in that, or my supposed protection of that, etc. So it was striking to me. It was striking.
Okay, so he's 11 now.
He's 11.
He has changed his name by deed poll.
Yes.
Well, you've done it for him. He couldn't do it because he was
minor. He had to be physically there and he had to speak up for himself at the time, actually. Yeah.
And he's a passport in the name of Steve.
Yes.
But I was just looking at my, because I've that card passport. I was just looking at it today. It declares me as male.
Yes.
So what does it say on Steve's passport?
Good question.
Yeah.
We have a Gender Recognition Act, and we have fabulous legislation in Ireland, actually. But the Gender Recognition Act is only applicable to those who are aged 16 and above. So as a result, there's no mechanism by which he can change his gender marker, it's called, on any of his state documents until he's 16. So one of the major reforms we looked for in the Gender Recognition Act, and there's been a big consultation process over the last 2 years, is to change that so that those under 16 do so with the consent of their parents or guardians, in the same way as you had would change health records, etc. So basically you couldn't make it up. He was going on holidays, he was going to a family wedding in France, and his passport was going to expire and go out a date while he was in France. So we had to get a new passport. At this stage, he's living as Steve. He's his haircut short as Steve. And we
he's
had
dressing
to,
as
he's
a,
dressing
as
and
a
he,
boy.
In every respect, he looks and sounds like, and it's called passing. So he passes as a boy. And so we had to get a new passport. So we started the process, and I would take all day. It was overwhelming. It was such an enormous exercise, and I can totally understand and respect the, you know, for child trafficking and protection laws reasoning. There's a lot of good basis for it, but geez, it's a hard exercise. It was hard work. So we got the amended passport.
You work in law, so you have an advantage.
I would say I. Not only do I have an advantage because I have an office. I can read and write. I have access to a computer. I have people who can assist me in terms of getting things done. I would absolutely feel for people who don't have access to all those privileges as we had. So we were able to get a new passport, get a deed poll name change, then get a passport. But then we had to, personally, I had to contact the Department of Social Protection, which is where his... he's lodged and registered as my child, and that links with the Department of Education. I had to contact the Department of Health. I had to individually do all of those, because if you change your details with one government department, it's really important you do it with them all, so that you're not investigated and confusing things. But for instance, in relation to the Department of Health, you have to contact each individual doctor. There is no, because we don't have recognition, or we're not linked in relation to PPS, etc. So there was a lot of work involved in that. But he is now registered everywhere as being Steve. But he is still, his gender marker is female.
F.
Yes.
Right. And that brings us on to, you know, the Tavistock Clinic in London. And up until, if you are transgender, you need to attend there, don't you, if you're Irish, because we don't have a similar clinic here. But they come over, do they, and have a sort of a pop-up clinic, do they?
So the Tavistock Clinic is, I gathered, the centre of excellence in the Northern Hemisphere. So we're actually really lucky, it's very close to us. And as an Irish solution to an Irish problem, as I might call it, the Tavistock Clinic work really closely with Our Lady's Children's Hospital in Crumlin. Mm. And what they have at the moment, and certainly what I'm aware of, so we apply through the Treatment Abroad Scheme as public patients. We were referred to Tavistock, and Tavistock, we went through the waiting list. So the major advantage we've had in all this is that Steve was able to articulate and speak to us at a very young age, in which case we were able to start this process at a very young age, because there are long waiting lists. So we get seen, or he gets seen, and we get seen in Crumlin. So the Tavistock team have, as you say, sort of pop-up clinics in Crumlin, and that's where we get seen. So at the moment, he has been through a process where he is assessed and reviewed, and it's what they call watchful waiting.
And watchful waiting for what?
So watchful waiting in terms of what his views are, what his persistent, insistent and consistent requests are, and watchful waiting in terms of puberty and onset of puberty.
Because that's a big thing, isn't it, in the life of a transgender person? Because you can, if you want, take hormone blockers, and they will stop the puberty process.
Female puberty.
Yeah, female puberty.
For Stevie.
Yeah, so Stevie won't develop breasts. So where are you? Because it's coming down the tracks, isn't it, in a hurry?
Well, if I talk in somewhat, you know, general terms rather than about him. So basically what I've learned is that the changes to your body during the first 2 years of puberty are incapable of being reversed. So the change to the shape of your jaw, your hairline, your waist, they're changes that can't ever be undone. Mm. So what you do is you buy time so that the individual, what I would seek to do is to buy time until the individual is that bit older to make decisions for themselves. It's not making any changes that are irreversible.
Right, that was my question.
Exactly.
Yeah. So hormone blocking
is reversible.
Reversible.
So if Steve was to if any transgender person was to have hormone blockers for, say, 2, 3, 4 years, when you stop those blockers, if they determined 2, 3, 4 years older that this was no longer the way they wanted to go, you stop taking the blockers and you would resume a female puberty.
Because reading accounts and talking to people, gender dysphoria becomes nightmarish in the teenage years.
The connection, most of us who aren't that familiar with this, etc., and particularly when it's not in your house, wouldn't be aware of just how sensitive people are to the changes in their bodies. Most of us don't necessarily even reflect and remember during that period too much of our lives. But I think the reality for kids who are going through early onset puberty or puberty and who really start to feel a total disconnect with their body, the effect on not just their physical but on their emotional and mental health is just phenomenally damaging, or can be phenomenally damaging. And as a result, you want to be able to provide insights and opportunities and options to kids as they need them. So we're very lucky that we're in that plan and in that program to be able to provide those to them.
And I'd say at this stage you've met many parents of transgender children. And has Steve met transgender women and men?
Yes.
He has?
Yes. So Tenny organises what they call a family weekend away, and it's usually in November. And we've been going for the last few years, and it is just phenomenal to meet other people. It is phenomenal to meet other parents. And as you can imagine, just meeting another parent who, the first year we went, I was really nervous, I'll be honest. Steve was telling everyone how excited he was. He couldn't wait to meet people like him. That's how he discussed it. We arrived, and I think I might have told you the story before, but we arrived and it was lashing rain, and I'm nervous about going in to meet all these people I've never met before, and they probably understand all of this and I don't, and all this, you know, internalising all this anxiety. And we go to get out of the car and his older sister says, "What if they think it's me?" And Steve says, "What if they do?" And we're standing in the rain and I have the bags and I'm thinking, and here's me internalising the mum questions, and I realise she's internalising hers and he's internalising his. So we all go to our first workshop the next day, and she comes out of her workshop and says, "I learned something really important today. I learned that I am the rock that holds this family together. You need to be there for him, but I am the rock that holds us together." And he came out of his session and said, "You know, actually, it's just amazing to meet people just like me, and they're all totally normal like me." And I came out of mine just saying, I'd been crying on the inside for about the entire session, because it was just so... it was so such a warm, compassionate hug to be around other parents who had similar experiences.
Hmm. And how much does he... He's 11 now.
Yes.
He obviously... He sounds like a very bright boy.
Yes.
Like, he understood a lot from a very early age.
Yes.
So he... Have you spoken to him about hormone blockers and the future? And you have discussed that.
So one of the key things, actually, that was quite difficult. So you have to have discussions. So before he can even be up for discussion with the clinical team, he has to be able to comprehend what puberty looks like for a girl, what puberty looks like for a boy, and what puberty looks like for a transgender girl with blockers. And he has to be clearly understanding and accepting of the reality and not the aspirational. So for instance, and if you can imagine, so this conversation started last year. Not many 10-year-olds are being asked to prepare and to study and to be quizzed on so that they have an understanding. But they were very clear with him directly in one-to-one chats that I'm on the periphery of, that really we can't progress this discussion until you are in a position to do that. So we came out from a meeting last year and he said, "You're going to need to get me a book, and I'm going to need to understand this, because I need to make sure that they understand, that I understand what puberty is going to look like and why this cannot happen to me." And I remember I was quite emotional about it, and we came out and I said, "Okay." And he said, "You're not to get me a book with any bits in it." And he reminds me, he's only 10, and that nearly broke my heart, I'll be honest. I was thinking, gosh.
How do you feel as a parent? Because it is classified as an abnormality, isn't it? Gender dysphoria.
I'll be honest, what I try and do as a parent is separate out the theory from the reality. So for instance, my folks and I will have at various stages said, hypothetically, it's a fascinating subject, you know, and I can see that
what a fascinating conversation.
It warps our minds to try, you know, and I'll be honest, as a lawyer, as fellow lawyers, it's mind bending, you know, it's hard to get your head around. But I think when it's in your family, and when it's a person, and I suppose that's why we're having this conversation, personal stories help people to understand.
Yes.
This isn't just a theory. This isn't a parent thinking this is hip hop or something.
And it's not a choice.
It is not a choice. He is a person. He is a person who was born this way. He has found his voice and is able to help me, to help him, and help us all to understand.
Which brings us nicely onto your award. So within the workplace then, did you feel you needed to tell Steve's story, or you asked to tell it?
It's There are sort of slightly two stages to that. I certainly didn't feel I wanted to, nor I needed to, nor I had to. But in 2016, we established a perspective group, which is our LGBT plus employee network. And Greg Louganis, the swimmer, came over to speak to us, and he spoke to us all about the concept of bringing your whole self to work. And there were lots of people who were really moved and really touched, and it was incredibly well received. And I came out and I bawled and thought, it would never have occurred to me to feel that I could, never mind should, tell my fellow colleagues. And the following morning, at the time Steve was transitioning, he transitioned in school, etc. And at the back of my mind would have been a concern as to how do I go to the Christmas party, the panto, at the next Christmas and say, oh, you know the way you used to know X, but here's Steve.
Yes.
And it wasn't that it was a concern for me, but it would have been, I would have been aware of it. So I told my team and work the following day, and the level of compassion was just phenomenal. Then I told a few of my partner colleagues, and it was, again, just phenomenal. But I started to feel the difference it made in me. So instead of feeling like I had to keep my outside world out of work and my inside world at home and keep the two entirely separate, I had my public and my private, there was this alignment. And the reality is that since 2016 up until now, there's this been alignment where my values and this bravery that my son has taught me, if I'm going to get real, as he says, and be real, you can't just do that at home. You have to be able to do that in work too. Mm. So last year, one of my colleagues in work, an incredible solicitor, Linda O'Neill, she stood up and told her story. And I was entirely moved. And she said, not many people have to come out to their entire offices. She said, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it in one standing. But she was so incredible and so inspiring. And people were so, it reminded people why you don't know everything about everybody around you. Mm. And really, you shouldn't presume you do, but you should presume that they are who they are. So she turned to me and said, you have to tell your story. Or said, would you tell your story? And I said, nobody wants to hear my story. My story is the story of a mum. And she said, yeah, but an ally's story is really important because it's something you've had to learn. And as Steve says to me, you don't know how I feel. You only know because I tell you.
Yeah.
And she says the same thing. And actually, the voice of an ally, I have learned, can be, people may say things to an ally they would not say to a person. And we get to be in rooms, perhaps, where conversations can be influenced and supported. And that's where I have had to.
And that's why you won the award. And Steve has made you a better person.
100%.
It's fascinating. And David there says, what a fascinating conversation, a real eye-opening on a subject I have to admit I would probably qualify as being slightly ignorant about. And I'm sure you're not in your own, David.
Him and I both.
A very well-spoken lady, and I hope everything goes well for Steve and all his family. So,
thank you so much.
Ashling, thanks so much
thanks
for coming in.
Thanks for listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.